a bizarre mystery that seems to have been solved. Or has it? And then we visit the house of a young boy who's just trying to have some fun. Like all of us. All of us just want things to be pretty normal. However, this boy is growing up in a haunted house. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Ethan Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. Hope you guys are having some fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a lot of stuff to cover today, so let's go ahead and jump. You're like, Jason, what's wrong with you? I can obviously tell you something's off. Something's off. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Maybe there's nothing. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But anyways, let's go ahead and get this party started, everyone. Get on your hands and feet and give a big round of applause for... Hello, humanoids. Woohoo, yeah, wee! Yeah, he's all walking on in, doing a little dance, trying to cheer me up. I'm not depressed, but I do like the dance. It's a pretty cool dance. Hello, humanoids. You're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially through the Patreon, I totally understand. I really do. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. A while back, we played a cool song at the end of one of our episodes, and I said it was from a band called Hello Humanoids. No, he's just a member of it. It's called Escapeology. I'll put that song in the show notes. Maybe I'll play it again at the end of this episode, because it was pretty cool. It's a song by Escapeology called Alien Nation. This episode has nothing to do with aliens, though, so the last episode, I kind of built it around it. I was like, oh, that's cool, an alien story leading into this song. Yeah, man, I'll give you the keys to the vehicle in 1 second. I'm just in a mood. It's weird. You know, people go through this stuff. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it. Probably kind of boring. The other night, I was laying in bed. It was late at night. I was getting ready to go sleep. And I was like, dude, what happens when I die? Not like going to another world, but just like rotting, just like rotting in my bed. I was thinking about it. Who was going to find me and what they were going to say at work. They're like, wee! They have this big party planned. They're like, woo, the poison worked. Jason's dead. There's like a big hoedown. Everyone's dancing. Each person has practiced a special dance move in the event of my death. Yeah, I was just like, I went to bed. Now, I think about death all the time. I think most people do, right? But today I got off work. This is pretty normal. I get off work and I walk home. I eat bowl soup. I watch some YouTube. And I fall asleep in a chair like an old man. I don't even have the energy to get up to go to bed. But if I sleep in the bed, I'll sleep, you know, until my alarm goes off. If I sleep in a chair, I'll only sleep till about an hour because that's when the pain of sleeping in a chair wakes me up. I'm like, ah! It's better than any alarm clock. I came home and I was eating soup and I was thinking, I don't know why I watched people play Project Zomboid on YouTube. I watched those videos. I was thinking, oh, you know, if I'm ever in a zombie apocalypse and I get bit or I'm just dying, right? They can't do nothing for me. I was like, I hope they leave me on the roof and I could just sit up on the roof for a couple days. I could watch the sun rise and set. I could be outdoors, watch the sun rise and set, counting the sunrises. I'm all boring. I mean, it's so funny because I thought about it. I was like, oh, yeah. And I'd be wondering if this is the last time I'm going to see the sunset and the moon comes up and the night sky is quiet except for the sound of 1,000 roaming corpses trying to claw their way up to the roof, but they can't because they're stupid zombies. And then I die. It's just very melancholy thought. It's very melancholy thought. Like, normally I'm like, oh, zombies attack. This is what I'm going to do. I never ever think about getting bit. Or getting in a position that I can't get out of, but I go, yeah, I hope I'm on the roof. And what's funny is I don't like the outdoors. I like the feeling of fresh air on my skin, but that's about it. If I can stick my arm out a car window every once in a while, I'm good. Just very melancholy the past couple days. I don't like being melancholy. It's kind of a downer. If you didn't know, it's kind of a downer. It's weird. Yeah, and like then I took a nap. I was like, oh, the peaceful embrace of death. That'll put me to sleep. And I woke up probably only maybe 20 minutes ago, and I was like, oh, I gotta record an episode, right? I gotta do my daily podcast. I'm all wearing all black now, putting on my eyeliner. Yeah, I'm just in a mood. But not necessarily a good mood, not necessarily a bad mood, just melancholy. I like that word. Yeah, I'm just in a mood, I guess. But we gotta do the show, right? I love doing the show, and maybe I'll be in a better mood by the end of it. Maybe this story of terrifying human tragedy will put a smile on my face. Hello, humanoids. Let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm gonna talk. I came up with this vehicle, though. This is a bonus to being melancholy, because we're gonna have some fun stuff, maybe. Hello, humanoids. I'm gonna go ahead and toss you the keys to the Lupin Lamborghini. Everyone climb in. There's only two seats, right? There's only two seats. Sorry, you gotta hang off the roof. Hello, humanoids is in the driver's seat. Everyone climb on board of the Lupin Lamborghini. Fire this bad boy up. We're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Drive us all the way out to India. Taking off, dude, in the Lupin Lamborghini. I had to look it up. I had to make sure that I'm pretty sure that is a Japanese anime and how you say rabbit in France. We're headed all the way out to India. Specifically, we're headed to Vinchhaya. That's in the Gujarat state of India. It's April 16th, 2023. That's the day that there are these two kids. They're 12 and 13 year old, brother and sister. I think it was a brother and sister. Walking home. They had just spent some time with their uncle who lived nearby. Because these kids' parents, you have Hemabhai Makawana, he's 38, and their mother, Hansabin, she's 35. They go, hey, kids, how would you like to spend some time with your uncle? And they're like, what? Dude, that'd be totally awesome, man. Our uncle is the greatest. It's all the parents feeling. They're like, oh, I mean, he's okay. You shouldn't say he's the greatest. We're the greatest. And the kids are like, uncle, uncle. They have matching tattoos that when they put their arms together, it spells uncle. They go, hey, would you like to go spend some time with your uncle? And they're like, yeah, dude, he's awesome. So the parents send the kids away. You know, it's pretty much walking distance to the uncle's house. It's not like across the country. And the kids leave. Now, on April 16th, 2023, they're coming back to the family farm. They're coming back from the uncle's house. They're like, oh, that was awesome. I had so much fun. That was really, really cool. And the brother's like, yeah, no, I agree. Like, our uncle's the best. They're walking back to the farm. Now, for the past year, Hemuhai and Hansabin have every single day, they would go to this tent they had set up on their property. And inside that tent, they would pray to and worship Shiva. Shiva, I think, is most well known in the West as the god of destruction. That's where you'll hear a lot of talk of Shiva. But Shiva is more than that. Shiva is a Hindu god. It's part of the Hindu trinity, which includes... You're like, oh, we pulled up Wikipedia for this part. I'm not going to go too much into it. But Shiva is part of the Hindu trinity, which includes Brahma and Vishnu. I'm not super familiar with Hindu, really any Eastern religion or deities, or, you know, I pretty much know the big ones, the ones that you just kind of pick up through cultural contamination, just, you know, knowing things. But I would have to look at Wikipedia to really get deeper into this. But anyway, so Shiva is the god of time, the cosmic dancer. That's kind of cool. Stuff like that. That clears, you're like, oh yeah, no, the cosmic dancer, that clears it up, Jason. Thank you. And thanks, Wikipedia. Well, at this house, at this farm in India, these parents, they would every single day go out to their property and worship Shiva. They had a picture of Shiva in this tent. And then they had this thing called a sheaving, which was made out of mud. And it's basically like an effigy, a point to focus all of your prayers on of Shiva. They go, generally they're made out of black stone or marble. This family made one out of mud. And the kids were used to this. Kids were used to the parents being like, hey, we're going to go worship Shiva. They're like, yeah, okay. And the parents would go out to this tent. They'd be in there. You probably wouldn't think anything of it as a kid. Neighbors probably didn't think anything that it was weird. It'd be the same thing as if someone goes, hey, I'm going to go pray at the church. I'm Catholic and I'm going to go pray at the church. You're like, okay, buddy, see you later. And they walk into the church. You wouldn't imagine that the unspeakable was going on in there. You'd just be like, oh, the dude's praying. But then one day you see a bunch of cop cars pull up outside that church and there's a bunch of dudes with cameras and they click, click, click. And you'd be like, okay, I'm a little worried about what might be going on in there. But I hope my friend's okay. Well, I hope everybody's okay. I don't care what happens to the priest. Just my friend. You'd be like, oh, I hope everybody's okay. But you wouldn't really ever think anything bad was going to happen. On April 16th, 2023... These two kids are walking home and they see the tent that's been on their property for a year. That's not alarming. What is alarming is that they see something sticking out of the bottom of the tent. It's two sets of legs. The rest of their parents, they can't see. The rest of them are underneath the tent. But when they start getting closer and closer to these legs that are poking out from the bottom of the tent, they realize something is horribly wrong. Police are notified. I don't know how much that these kids actually saw. I don't know if they went into the tent themselves. I really hope not. However, there were photographs taken of this, and they're pretty easy to find online. I was coming across unblurred photographs just reading the news articles I was reading, because this became big national news. What had happened is that you have this tent, and inside you have this little place to worship. And you have these two sets of legs sticking out from underneath the tent. The parents had built a two-person guillotine. This massive metal blade attached to it. They both laid down. And from what I can gather from the photograph, that they were facing up. The parents are actually facing up when they put their heads in the guillotine and they're looking up and the rope is pulled or released and the heavy metal blade came down and chopped both of their heads off at the same time. And there was also a fire, a little like fire pit that was in this tent. So it wasn't just that the blade came down and chopped their heads off. Their heads then rolled into the fire that was stoked for this particular reason. The heads rolled into the fire as a purification type ritual. The police, here's the thing. Followers of Shiva are not known for doing this. The police have tried wondering, like, what happened. They go, it wasn't an accident, because this is a homemade guillotine. It wasn't like they'd built this, and then the fire was something that was just not related to it. They actually believe that the goal of this was to not only chop their heads off, commit suicide at the same time, but for their heads to then roll into this fire. The police also said, well, you know, we have this letter from the parents. They kind of explain a little bit of it. And the letter's basically like, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to perform this ritual. We're not going to survive. This is the end of us. We want to make sure that our children, our now orphaned children, are taken care of by our parents. But their parents are old. Their parents are elderly, right? These people were in their mid to late 30s. So, I mean, their parents are probably like at the minimum 50s, right? If they started having kids really young, maybe even older. Tragic all around. The police started thinking, well, I wonder if this was some sort of like black magic ritual. Like they've been trying to like sacrifice themselves for something, some goal. Are they trying to show their true dedication to Shiva? I mean, possibly, but they're dead now. It really wouldn't benefit anyone. they go, were they trying to cast a spell for, like, wealth? I mean, again, like, it's not going to benefit anyone. They said in their letter, our children are now orphans. They're not, you know? So they started asking around, though, and the neighbors said, hey, listen, as far as we know, they didn't have any money problems. They got along great. Not a murder-suicide. It's not like it was an abusive relationship that ended in the darkest way possible. What I thought was interesting, I mean, obviously, it's absolutely tragic. We see a lot of this stuff happen all over the world, where people follow a particularly religious belief to a horrible end. We see this type of stuff happening, and it's always tragic. Probably not good to talk about when I'm already a little melancholy, but it's always awful. We've covered stories about, and we've covered a lot of stories about cults on the show. We don't so much anymore. Not because I think they're boring. It's horrific, right? It's horrific. But we also cover stuff where people's conspiracy theory beliefs get them to do something insane. There recently was that young man. I don't remember his name. I could pull it up, but he killed himself. I'm thinking about it, doing a deep dive into him. Because the media's already kind of come and gone with that. They don't talk about it anymore. There was that dude who set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial. I'll pull his name up real quick. And he was a pretty hardcore conspiracy theory advocate when he set himself on file. He still has... I wonder if it's still up. I'm surprised they haven't taken it down now. He has a Substack, which I made a copy of, because I honestly thought that it would get deleted right away. There's that guy here in the United States named Max Azzarello. He set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial in Manhattan and died probably about 12 hours later. He was horrifically burned. And before he died, he threw a bunch of flyers around and then set himself on fire. People, it's so shocking to see anything like that. You don't know what to do. And even if you saw a guy set himself on fire, like, how do you help him? You know, you blast him with a fire hose. He's like, he's flying away. So, I mean, maybe if he was in the Little Rascals, but you know what I mean? You can't really get super close to him. You don't want to catch on fire. You want to put him out. It's not like someone started stabbing themselves. You can kind of get in the middle of that. Again, probably not super safe to do that either. But anyways, he started throwing these flyers around and he died. He self-immolated. And one of his big conspiracy theories is that The Simpsons is actually a kick in the balls to America. It's like this, there's these hidden messages in the Simpsons, the television show The Simpsons. And he says, because almost every writer on that show is a graduate of Harvard, it's this huge elite conspiracy to show us a world where a average person is a fat, stupid oaf, like Homer Simpson, under the thumb of a billionaire businessman who only cares for profit. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. It's like psychological warfare. It's Harvard, the elites, these kids coming out of Harvard, telling Americans generation after generation for, what, 30 years at this point? You're stupid. You're fat and stupid, and there's nothing you can do about it. And he even says the character of Lisa Simpson is supposed to mock us as well. There's one truism in this world. Everyone knows Lisa Simpson's not funny, and her episodes are not funny. Anytime she's most of the plot, it's a dumb episode. I always get mad when I sit down and watch a new episode of Simpsons, and then I find out it's a Lisa episode. I'll shut it off. It's terrible. But that's not what his problem was with it. Max said no. He goes, Lisa Simpson's character is actually super important because what she is the voice of change and the voice of fighting back against the system, and she is constantly cut off at the knees. She's constantly the butt of the joke. Like, even the episodes where she really tries to make a difference, it ends up really not mattering, or it's such a small, substantial change that it doesn't matter. And actually, it doesn't matter at all because the status quo is the same. It's a cartoon. So even if they have an episode where she fights for, like, thinking outside of the religious box, or she fights for taking down Mr. Burns, or she fights for a new recycling center set up in the elementary school, all of it's forgotten the next episode. So that's, again, the Harvard elite, as he puts it, telling us psychologically, subliminally, not subliminally, subconsciously telling us, is that the same thing? Basically, these messages are, there's nothing you can do to change anything. Nothing. The world resets to a status quo. Whether you're a stupid oaf or you're an idealist, you can do nothing. Super interesting conspiracy theory. Super interesting conspiracy theory. Not worth killing yourself over. I'd argue most conspiracy theories fit into that category. You don't kill yourself over them. Of course, more... listen, in his view, this was one of the biggest conspiracy theories going on. In Max's view, it probably was worth killing himself over. It's horrible. He was wrong. But he was so fixated on that. Because most people read this stuff and then go, wow, man, that's weird. Most people don't even look at the Substack. They're just reading what they see in the news. And the people who do go to the Substack out of some sort of curiosity go, wow, that's pretty crazy. That's a really crazy conspiracy theory. And then in that group, you have a smaller subset that goes, he might have been onto something that actually does, in a way, kind of makes sense. But even in that group, they'll almost all agree, but it's not worth killing yourself over. Interesting. He's viewing the world from a different angle. If he 100% believed in this conspiracy theory, he goes on and on about like Ponzi schemes and the political parties are all fake. It's all like professional wrestling. These are all really like just basic level conspiracy theories. He's mentally ill because he set himself on fire and killed himself. He's not mentally ill because he believed that Hillary Clinton and Trump, it was just all a big sideshow. A lot of people believe that. I don't even think he's mentally ill because he thought that there were these hidden symbols, these hidden storylines in The Simpsons. That's a pretty interesting reading of the show. He's mentally ill because he burned himself alive in public. Which is sad. And I think that that goes too. I mean, this might sound insensitive, but I think it's true. You can be a devout Hindu. You can be a devout Catholic. You can be a devout really anything. And not kill yourself. Once you chop your heads off, you and your wife's head off, and rolls into the fire, and your kids are going to find the bodies. That's why they sent them to the uncle's house in the first place. That's mental illness. I don't think being religious is a mental illness. I don't think believing in a weird religion is a mental illness either, whether it's like Heaven's Gate or whatever. Like, that was a mental illness, right? Because they did end up killing themselves. But I'm not super judgmental towards religions because they're all weird. Right, I'm religious, and I don't hold it against other people for having beliefs that are against the grain socially or spiritually or anything like that. Once you chop your own heads off, once you set yourself on fire, once you believe your kids are half-human, half-reptilian monsters, and you kill them both with a spear gun in Mexico, we've covered that story. That was another conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theorist who believed too much. You know, now you suffer from mental illness. That guy was arrested. I don't remember his name. I'll put it in the show notes. We've talked about him before. And I remember after he got arrested and he'd been in jail for a while and he didn't have internet access, he started to realize, oh my God, what have I done? Like he expected these things to happen after killing these reptilian children. They weren't. They were human children, his children. And the more he was outside of that rabbit hole, I don't believe the people who were telling him this stuff, I don't even think they were mentally ill. They're just talking about a conspiracy theory they believe. The reptilians are taking over the planet. But, and you have the right to say that. You have the right to believe that. I don't think it's the guy who posted that blog online that this murderer was reading. And the murderer goes and kills his kids. I don't think the guy who wrote that stuff. I'm sure he feels terrible about it. I'm sure he feels awful about it. Because he was part of these kids' murder. I mean, listen, who knows, right? That guy, whoever he was following, I'm not sure, because it's probably a bunch of different groups, honestly. They may not care. They may be so deep in the conspiracy theory as well, but I think you got to own it a little bit. I don't think you're devoid of blame. but I don't think it's the person's fault by saying reptilians are taking over the planet, reptilians taking over the planet. And then some guy believes you so much that he kills his kids. You know, at the end of the day, it's that dad's fault. These parents, though, as far as we can tell, no one, they weren't following a particular religious leader or something like that. They were just themselves. Well, here, you know, okay, so here's an interesting thing. That is a big question, actually. Is when you look at these articles, a lot of them have comment sections. And there were people in the community who were locally in the community where this happened, commenting on these stories. And you started seeing kind of two different messages show up. One of them were people who were super racist, like locally racist, not just like someone in Paraguay who hates Indians, but people in India who weren't Indian. Or people in India who were Muslim, you saw a lot of like, well, they're all idiots. They're all idiots. They're a bunch of bumpkins. They're a bunch of farmers. It's this rural, stupid city full of rural people. And it doesn't shock me that they would do this. You saw a lot of comments like that. They go, this is what Hindus do. They're awful people. You'd see those comments from Muslims. You'd see comments from people who weren't Indian saying, well, this is what they do. They're just all nuts. You'd see a lot of racism. You'd see a lot of anti-religious, anti-Hindu stuff. What do you expect? They're Hindu was kind of the point. Very hateful comments. Then there was another set of comments that were popping up in the middle of all those, saying that the letter that was found by the police was not signed. So I don't know if this is a local rumor or if these were people in the area, people who knew this couple, people who lived near them. I don't know if it's a rumor that's spreading or they have firsthand knowledge that we don't. The letter wasn't signed. It had a thumbprint. That's how they signed it. They put their thumb, put a little ink on their thumb and pressed it on the bottom of the letter, and it was a thumbprint. People go, it's kind of weird. Did they kill themselves? And that's kind of the story that's been going around in the area. Who knows? I mean, that's back to a conspiracy theory. We don't really have enough evidence to back it up. We're going off these people's word. And if that is true, here's the thing. They could press the thumbprint. They could use their thumbs to sign it. And that was the way they wanted to sign it, because they knew it would be unassailable. It's their thumb. And then they did kill themselves. Or, you know, the conspiracy would be that they didn't kill themselves. Somebody murdered them. They made him write the letter. Whether it was typed out, I mean, you could type out a letter. I could type out a letter. If it was typed out with a thumbprint, that's definitely more suspicious than it being handwritten with a thumbprint. You'd go, well, the rest of the handwriting on the letter looks fair. But you can write under duress. Someone came in and said, hey, we want you to write a suicide note. But at that point, you'd figure you'd probably get them to sign it pretty easy as well. You say, listen, we're going to kill you and your wife. So write this letter. And then you're like, nah, that's too much. I'm not going to sign it. After you've written the letter, you're like, nah, I'm not going to sign it. And they're like, well, we're just going to kill you and put your thumb on it anyways. Like, if you've already written the letter under duress, the signing would be kind of the same. But that's a conspiracy going on. Did they kill themselves? Or was it murder? And this is one of those cases, too, that, you know, the police are going to kind of look at and say, everything points to suicide. Every little thing we can look at points to suicide. Even if they're suspicious about the thumbprints, they have to move on. They have to get the next case. Even if something doesn't really make sense, they go, well, let's move on to the next case. So it's a super interesting story, because it is a true crime that involves worshiping a deity. It does fall into that Venn diagram of true crime, paranormal, and conspiracy. Was it murder? Was it suicide? If it was suicide, what was the true reason why? Like, even in the letter, I mean, no one in any of the articles were able to say exactly why they did it. The letter apparently was more of a, this is what we want to happen next. But why did they do it? Why did they feel that was their only option? Were they trying to give their kids a better life? You think you would include that in the letter? Was there something going on in that tent day after day for an entire year that drove them in this religious fervor to kill themselves? Was there a larger group of worshipers in the area that were doing a similar worshiping or similar ritual? And it is a broad conspiracy and they were killed for whatever reason? We don't know. We don't know. The police don't know, but they say, the police do know. They go, it was suicide. You know, that's what they believe, and they move on to the next case. But in this community, they're still wondering about it. They're still talking about it. And I'm sure there are still whispers that this couple did not kill themselves, that they were actually murdered, which is a conspiracy theory. It does make it easier to digest. It's much easier to think that these two parents were murdered by an outside force than they would willingly kill themselves and leave their children here and create such a scenario where their children would find their bodies. That's incomprehensible to most people, and definitely incomprehensible to all parents. They go, like, I would never do that. I would never, ever do that to my kids. So, XYZ. That's why that a conspiracy theory could be born and has been born. Because you go, that's impossible. I would never do that on my kids. There must be some other force, not paranormal, external criminal force or cult-like force or whatever. Because I would never do that. Therefore, they probably didn't do that either. But either way, it's a tragedy. Either way, it's an absolute tragedy. And I feel for those kids, and I hope that, you know, they're able to move on as best as they can. And the people in the community will always wonder what happened in that tent. But they'll never know. They'll never have a answer that gives them peace in their heart. Because suicide or murder, both of them are just so tragic in this case. Hello Humanoids is like, oh man, he's all driving the Lamborghini. He's like, this is dope, dude. And now he's just sitting in the, he's sitting in behind the steering wheel. He's like, oh man. I actually don't have enough time rubbing his back. It's okay, buddy. It's okay. I don't have enough time to do the story about the boy in the haunted house. Let me see what I got. I talked a really long time about that. I hope you guys, I would hate to say find that entertaining, because it was, at the end of the day, it was about parents killing themselves or being murdered, but entertaining might not be the right word. But let's see, let me find something else here that's shorter. Maybe something about aliens. Let's take a look. Oh, here's one. This one might cheer you up. Hello, humanoids. Let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world famous Carpenter Copter. We are leaving behind India. Fly us all the way out to the big city. Headed all the way out to the big city. We don't know exactly where this story takes place, other than a big city. We're about to meet this young man. Let's go ahead and call him Carlos. And he works for a food delivery service. So probably like Uber Eats or something like that. I'm sure they'd love to have their name attached to this story. Uber Eats, maybe. What's the other one? Lyft Licks. Uber Eats, he's driving around. Lyft Licks, something like that. He is driving around in his car. He has this warm food sitting next to him. I'd hate to deliver food. I used to deliver pizza. I was hungry all the time. But you know, pizza, I just go back to the pizza shop and eat some. Imagine if he had to keep going to like a Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they're like, a bucket of chicken, please. And you're like, oh, I'm so hungry. You're like, well, they ordered 8 pieces, but clearly they won't notice one missing. They're driving up to pick up some Kentucky Fried Chicken. I would love to tell you guys my stories working at Godfather's Pizza. Because, man, it was some crazy stuff back then. Not even ghost-related. Just gross-related. But I don't know, like, legally, I'm sure some of the stuff that I did at Godfather's Pizza, for all I know, there's no statute of limitations for being a food-based terrorist. So those stories remain in the vault for now. This dude, though, he's driving around. He hasn't committed any food-based crimes. You're like, wow, what? Thinking, what could that possibly be? It's not that bad. It's not what you're thinking. Because I know you're thinking about that pervert at Arby's, but that episode of the show notes, you're like, just bringing that story up. That's the most disgusting story you've ever covered. The pervert at Arby's. No, you know, you work in a pizza parlor. Things happen. You know, it's Italian food. You're going to do Italian things. You're going to break a couple laws. Anyways, Carlos is driving around, all this food in his car, and he's driving to this area. He said it had been renovated probably about a decade or two ago. It looked really nice back when they did it. He goes, even now, it still looks nice. And not as nice as it used to look when they renovated it because they wanted to bring more tourism to the city. You know, not the worst place you could deliver. And he ends up seeing the delivery tag on the food, and it's to this nice apartment complex. Like, oh, that'll be cool. Maybe a big tip. Maybe shouldn't have eaten some of their chicken. But that way, if I don't get a tip, at least I got a piece of chicken. He's driving up to this apartment complex. Very chic, he says. And the delivery's on the third floor. So he parks the car, grabs the food, gets out. He walks into the apartment complex. Carlos is halfway across the lobby, and something in his gut tells him, I don't know if I want to be here. I don't feel that good. Could it be the KFC I ate? Could be something else. He's a delivery man. There is an oath that everybody takes when they decide to deliver someone else's food. Through storms or gunfire, we will come to bring you lunch for you to gnaw on. We have to recite that every day before work. He's walking through the lobby, carrying this food. He feels uneasy. By the time he gets to the elevator, he's feeling even worse. Presses the button. Elevator door closes. That's the elevator going up floor. Goes up to third floor. The door opens up and he walks out onto the hallway of the third floor. And Carlos's heart. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. Dun, 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 dun. His heart's pounding. He feels like the walls are suffocating him. He's like, oh, isn't this the perfect guy you'd want to deliver you food? You're like, oh, I'm so hungry. And you open the door, and this dude's just sweating. He's all sweating his heart. Dun, 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 dun. He's like, ah, the walls, I can't breathe. You're like, ah, man, I don't know if I want this food anymore. He's all sweating into your food. He's walking down the hallway. He feels like he's suffocating. He feels nothing but pure dread all around him. These are actually the signs of heart attack as well. If you have all of these signs, you know, you might want to sit down and make sure you're not having a heart attack. But anyways, he's walking in pure dread. Can't breathe. Walls are closing in on him. Heart is pounding. He walks up to the door. Bing bong. Dude comes to the door and goes, all right, man, KFC, right before the big game, here you go, sir, and keep the change. That's for you. And guy takes the food and Carlos is profusely sweating. He's like, what is going on here? And takes his money and he goes down in the elevator and goes out to his car. And he's like, what the hell was that? Was that an anxiety attack? Was that a heart attack? His left arm's all numb. He's like, oh, trying to open his car door. He's just slamming it against the side of the car door. Why can't this arm work? He couldn't figure out exactly what happened. He didn't really, not that he didn't think too much about it, but once he gets out, he's like, wow, that was like a crazy one-off experience that will never, ever happen again. I'm not going to get my heart checked out. My vision's blurry, but that's okay. I'm going to drive home. He doesn't really think anything. He's uncomfortable, but he doesn't really connect what happened to him to the apartment complex. Well, at a later point, we don't know if it was days or weeks later, but he gets a order. His boss is like, hey, Carlos, we got a delivery for you. Don't worry, it's a great part of town. It's a real fancy apartment complex. And Carlos is like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Takes a food order. Maybe it's not Uber Eats because he has a boss. I don't think the boss is in the car. He's like, ah, I get 80% of your paycheck and I just get to tell you what to do. I think it's probably like Chinese or pizza or something like that. I probably should have put that higher up in my notes. But anyways, his boss goes, yeah, we got another delivery out of that really shay apartment complex. So Carlos gets the food. He's driving out there and he walks into the lobby and he goes, I don't feel too good. This is weird. I kind of remember this. I know where this is going. He gets in the elevator, gets to the third floor. He's sweating. His heart's pounding. He's like, I just walking down the hallway, hella loud. The torment. And you're like, what? And then you're like, I hope who's ever screaming in the hallway does not knock. Oh, nope. He's knocking on my door. That's my food guy. And you open the door and he's like, here's your food. I gotta leave just to pay with your credit card. Carlos says he went to that apartment complex a total of 3 times. After the third time, he's like, I'm never going back there. There's obviously something wrong. And then that's it. He's done. At the third time, he's walking around feeling all of these sensations. Pounding heart. Can't breathe. Just general unease when he walks in the building, but by the time he gets to the third floor, something's truly wrong. He tells his boss, I'm never delivering there again. Absolutely not. I'm not doing that. Well, years later, Carlos was thinking about that. Carlos was like, what was that thing? That was so weird that happened 3 times. I went to the same apartment complex, and I just got the worst feeling, and it kind of stuck in his craw for a bit. He's like, I'm gonna look that up. He goes, I did. He goes, I Googled the address. He goes, I don't even know why I took these steps, like specifically these steps. He goes, I Googled the address because, you know, the apartment complex had been there and it was renovated. It's really nice now. And so it had a history, though. It had been there before. He goes, I Googled the address. He goes, and then I decided to, and nothing really popped up right away. He goes, then I started searching the city for murders. The city I live in, I started looking at murders, and that's when he got this hit. He goes, I was looking at murders in my city. He goes, eventually, in the articles about murders, it mentioned the name of that building. It mentioned the name of that apartment complex. Back in the 80s, in that apartment complex, or whatever it was before, like a hotel, could have been a hotel before. It could have always been an apartment complex. I'm not for sure, but he goes, back in the 80s, on the third floor, there was a horrific triple homicide. 3 people were murdered due to a drug-related crime, whether it was a bad buy, someone's kind of pay money for the drugs, and a robbery attempt is made and people are killed, or somebody owed somebody money for drugs. Whatever it was, 3 people were murdered on that floor back in the 80s. And at that point, Carlos had said, this has to have something to do with what I was feeling. I'm walking around on this third floor and I'm feeling just absolute dread. Terror. I couldn't wait to get out of there. Interesting and really kind of a classic ghost story. But I was thinking about it. I was thinking about this horrific event. I was like, oh, I'll think about this story as I'm dying on a roof during a zombie apocalypse. Oh, memories. Triple murder ghost story. I was thinking about it. I go, I wonder what's actually going on that floor. First off, he felt it the second he walked into the building. And the fact that there's a bunch of people living in this apartment complex would make me think that most of the people don't feel this. Right? You're like, well, you know, I do have the sense of overwhelming dread. Every time I walk into this building, I'm sweating profusely and I feel like I'm going to suffocate. However, the rent is cheap. So I just run through the lobby and get to my apartment on the third floor and shut the door before the spirits of the damned drive me crazy. Most of the people, if not all of the people who lived there, probably did not sense any of this. One or two of them may have had an odd feeling about the place, but maybe they lived on the second floor or the fourth floor, and they're like, ah, you know, it's kind of weird, but the rent's good. I'm sure every so often one of the people living in that apartment brought home, like, a boy or a girl, whoever they're dating, and they could have been like, dude, this place is super creepy. Like, there's something wrong with this place. And they're like, oh, whatever, baby, come closer and give me a smooch. Okay. I'll forget that I saw a howling phantasm, a bloody spirit in your bathroom, because, you know, I want to give you a kiss. I'm sure some people picked up on it who probably were visiting. Most of the residents either ignored it or never picked up on it on the first place. But Carlos did, and I started thinking, I go, why Carlos? Like, that's a question that we see with any sort of paranormal story. Why do we have mediums, people who can contact spirits, and other people who can't? They can't see him at all. They can't hear him at all. There's tons of people in between those two. Why does Carlos have the ability to do an ability that he probably didn't want to have? And he didn't go on and say, well, I always have these wacky paranormal experiences. It was kind of just this. And even when it was happening, he didn't specifically think it was paranormal. He just thought it was weird. It wasn't until years later when he was like, what was up with that building? When he was walking around, there's two terrifying answers to this. Then we'll wrap this episode up. There's two terrifying answers to this story. One is that Carlos is walking around and he begins to pick up on the emotions of that murder or murders. So when he's on that third floor, he's feeling like sweaty. His heart's pounding. He feels like he can't breathe. But what he's actually experiencing is the emotions of three people who were murdered. And they're coming at him all at the same time. So let's say that there are these three people in this apartment, and let's say they ripped off a drug dealer, which is one of the dumbest things you could possibly do, by the way. Rip off a drug dealer or not tipping your Godfather's pizza delivery driver. Trust me, many people fell to my blade. Ripping off a drug dealer, it's such a short-term gain for such a permanent consequence. Ripping off a drug dealer, it's idiotic in the fullest. But you rip off a drug dealer, and then you know that this drug dealer is looking for you in town, and it's you and your two buddies. And you've already had some close calls running into this guy or his goons, and you guys are staying here. Maybe it's even, let's make it even more horrific since we're already there. You have a guy who ripped off a drug dealer, and you have two people who are friends of that guy. And that guy shows up at your apartment one night. He's like, you gotta let me in. Somebody's looking for me. You know, I'm just gonna stay here a night. I'll be gone tomorrow. I just need to get some stuff, some affairs in order, and da 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 da. They could have nothing to do with this. And then it's 3 a.m, and these goons break into your apartment. They grab the guy that they want, who's ripped him off, and they kill him. And you and your roomie, who were just happened to be friends with this guy, you knew him back in high school. You kept touch during the early 20s, you know, but not like you're his best friend or anything like that anymore. Now you're being beaten to death by a bunch of guys with baseball bats because you happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You happen to be friends with the wrong guy and you helped him on the wrong night. And during all of that, right, let's say it takes 5 to 10 minutes to murder three people. Do you think that they felt like they couldn't breathe? Do you think they felt that their heart was pounding in their chest from the fear of watching this horrific event take place? Now, I don't know exactly how they died. They may have all gotten shot in the head. They may have all been drug dealers, and it was a revenge hit. I don't know. You're like, Jason, you pretty much picked the worst version. You're like, maybe, let's get rid of the drug dealers altogether. It's you, a baby, and a blind kid. And the drug dealers think that you stole their money, but no. You just were walking down the street with a similar-looking suitcase. I mean, I did pick a pretty horrific version of it, but my point is, you're all crying. Why do I listen to this podcast? This is so sad. And Jason's just laughing. That cures his melancholy, but he's giving it to me. Drug dealers come in, they murder three people. Again, one of the worst things you can do, because that's the problem when you owe drug dealers money, it's not just that they're going to kill you. You can try to leave the city, and I would recommend that. I'd recommend not owing drug dealers money to begin with. But there's a certain fear that pervades your life when you owe a drug dealer money. It's not just that. If someone says, hey, I'm going to beat you up, like, whatever, meet me outside. I don't really care about that type of thing. But when you know you own a drug dealer, $5,000, and there's no way you can get the $5,000, and the drugs you took are already gone, and this guy's going to kill you, it infects your entire existence. You're so terrified of what is going to happen or what may happen. A lot of this is fear-based, right? That's why people pay drug dealers their money, because you're brain starts spinning like, what if he does this? What if he does that? What if he does this? And some people think they can get away with it. Those people either have the ability to leave the city, or they have enough people behind them, i.e. another gang, that makes targeting them not super feasible. Because you have to get through 10 guys to get to that guy. That's rarely the case, because your friends will be like, well, you did rip off the drug dealer. Like, can we really trust you? But it does happen. You leave the city, you have enough stuff between you and them that they can't really get to you. And because once you rip off a drug dealer, the problem is that if they allow it, then everyone will rip them off. That's what it comes down to. That's why they'll break your legs. That's why they'll put your feet in boiling hot water, stuff like that. Because it shows a dead man's never going to pay his bills. But you do something like that, and it shows everyone else in the community that you mean business. If someone rips you off $5,000 and you don't do anything to stop it, you will continually get ripped off until you're out of business. It's blood in the water. So to prevent that, you have to put blood in the water. You have to assault someone, torture them, or possibly kill them, depending on the case, depending on what's going on. What was I talking about? I don't know why I went off on that tangent. I know it's kind of related to this. So yeah, once you find yourself in this type of situation, you are terrified. So just the fear of walking into this apartment, knowing that at any moment this gang's going to find you, or this dude is going to find you, that energy that is leaking off of this person or people, because, you know, three people did die, is just soaking into this building. And then jump forward decades later, Carlos is walking down the same hallway that this group walked down, and they were so scared about what was going to happen. He's basically picking up the emotional residue that they left behind. That's option one. And that's probably the best option out of the two, is that these people, they were murdered and they've passed on. They've just soaked this area full of negative energy. Option two is that their ghosts are still here, and that their souls are trapped in this building. And he's not just sensing the residual energy. These spirits are standing in this hallway with him, and they're mourning their deaths. They're sitting there in the hallways, just sobbing. These spirits lost between worlds, died so young over something so stupid. They're still there. They're still tortured. They're still torn. They're still tormented by what happened to them. And they're watching Carlos walk down this hallway, envious of his young life, with everything ahead of him. These spirits, day in and day out, right? Carlos can sense this, but this place is full of people living their lives in these apartments, and yet you have this trio of spirits who can't leave. They can only watch people live the lives that were once promised to them, that were cut so short over such a bad string of decisions. And now, you know, out of those two, I would hope it was just the I would hope it was just the tear-stained corridors from three souls that were taken too young, rather than the souls still being trapped there as well. I just find it so fascinating that only he experiences it, as far as we know. Like, when he looked up the apartment complex, he didn't pull up a bunch of ghost stories. As far as we can tell, he didn't mention them. He didn't really find anything that would explain why he was having that reaction. But he did have that reaction, so why him? It's creepy because if everyone else in that apartment complex doesn't sense it, and it's just the emotional scars affecting the area. It's just that this area was so seeped in sorrow from these young lives that were taken that the residents there don't really pick up on it. That's fine. Right? It's like walking into a room and someone farted really, really bad. You may be the only one who smelt it, and we all know whoever smelt it dealt it. You notice no one else is reacting to it, and you're like, oh my god, that's the worst smell ever. But, you know, you can't blame anyone else for not smelling it, and it's really nobody's fault, except for yours, because you did dealt it. But imagine if you were a soul screaming out for help, screaming across the divide between life and death, screaming out for some sort of acknowledgement, and people don't even know that you're there. You're just this wraith. But you're even less than that. Nobody even knows that you're haunted, a shade. You're a lost spirit yearning that somebody may help you find peace and help you to the other side. But you just see day by day people walk down this hallway. Bag of groceries. They walk right past you and you're just screaming as loud as you can and nobody can hear you. You're just this shadow of a spirit mourning your death, and yet no one even hears you, no one even notices you. You might as well not even have existed in the first place. And then one day you see a young man walk in, and you can tell he knows you're here. You can watch him be affected by your presence, even though no one else in this building has ever even acknowledged you in any way, shape, or form. This young man, you can tell just by his uneasiness with the psychic energy flowing through the building that, yes, he can sense you. He can tell that there is something here. Something's wrong. And what's wrong is you are trapped. You're trapped in this building, you're trapped on this plane of existence, but this guy notices you. This guy can tell something's wrong. This guy might be the answer to ending this torment. You see him two more times, he has the same reaction. Maybe he'll reach out. Maybe he'll find somebody, a medium. Maybe he'll get a ghost hunting crew. Maybe he'll get someone who can help explain what happened to me. Maybe he can get somebody who can lead me into the light. And then you never, ever see him again. You remain a lost soul on the third floor of an apartment building. Screaming for somebody to help you. But your cries for redemption just echo down an empty hallway. I feel slightly better now. I actually feel like maybe I just needed to record an episode. Man, I cheer real good. The melancholy. Oh, chase those blues away. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. You're not, probably, but have a great one, guys.